Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori, and my guest is Bob Farron, the Director of Agronomy here at Pinehurst. He's been the Director of Agronomy since 2000, but has been here at Pinehurst since 1982. Boy, Bob, you are part of the family for sure here at Pinehurst.
I've certainly had a great run here, and it's really, I feel it's part of my DNA being here, and I've seen a lot of changes and a lot of improvements made over the years.
What has struck you the most as far as changes here since 1982?
Well, the fact that we are continually changing. We made a lot of changes, especially after Club Court bought it in 84, made a lot of capital improvements and in the golf and built new golf courses. We opened number 7 golf course in that time frame, and then our centennial course number 8 in 95. And continually improving varieties of turf that we use and the concepts and construction of everything. So it's been a great 40, close to 40 years with so many different architects and people that are knowledgeable of the game and love the game. That's the key, the people that love the game. And they're here to play because they love it.
You have certainly seen it evolve since 1982. And you've worked with some pretty well-known architects, right? I know Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw restored number 2. What was it like working with them, and how involved do you get when you work with these architects?
I was very much involved with Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw with course number 2, and it was such a process and such a respect they had for the ground and for the design of course number 2. And they realized and was able to point out a lot of changes over the last 30 years of the improvements that I had made as we were creating and meeting the wishes and expectations of our guests and members in the 80s and 90s. They expected and appreciated a different golf course than what it was in the 30s and 40s. And golf changed over those years, and the expectations of the golfers did. But Bill especially, and Ben, because Ben had played competitively on it a number of times, they could point out to me the changes that had been made as well as I could know. I would know what phases of irrigation we had added and all the changes that we had made. So we're really lifting off each of those layers of those changes of the 80s and 90s, because it was a different concept. And the thing I remember the most, I think, that really gained my respect beyond their knowledge of golf. They certainly couldn't question that. But they actually, as we were talking about these changes that had been made, I would say something like, well, we put, you know, set 600 heads of irrigation addition in on these years. So we were taking those all out. And one day Ben looked at me and said, Bob, you've been part of all these changes. And I'm like, yeah. He said, well, and you're embracing what we're doing, but we want to make sure that we're not stepping on your career. We're wiping out your entire body of your work. And I'm like, that's great. We're going to do what the golf course dictates. And that's what we did. And the people, myself included, and everyone else had confidence in what they were doing. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
What kind of changes were made? What were the major changes when they came in and kind of renovated it?
Well, as we were walking through it, and again, highlighting and noting those changes that have been made, our goal was to take it back to what it was in 1935 or 40, in that era when Donald.
What did they have to do?
We went out and marked all the changes that we made. The turf we added, we took it all away. We took away 35 or 40 acres of turf that had been added over the years and exposed the native areas and the sandy areas, which was really the what part of number 2 golf course, what made number 2 golf course. But the really telling piece that we found as we were starting, and they were learning more about it and kind of taking baby steps, if you will. We were able to discover a photograph from 1943 that showed an aerial photograph with great, great accuracy. And it was exactly as they were thinking it should be. And then we had a lot of confidence, and we took off from there.
So how did the players react to those changes? I mean, I guess some of them were too young to know the difference, but what was the reaction for the 2014 U.S. Open that Martin Kaymer won and Michelle Wee won for the U.S. Women's Open?
I think the ones that embraced the change played really well. The ones that were opposed to it, and they were some vocal, that did not like it, and very few of them even made the cut. But
it's all a mindset, right?
But it was unlike any U.S. Open setup ever. And that was one of the points that Coren Crenshaw made, and Mike Davis with USGA played a big part in all the process of changes as we were making them. Coren Crenshaw had a concern that we would do these changes. This was in 2010. And then the USGA would come back in and undo them for the championship. But that was not the case. They assured us from day one, this is what we want. And that made a big difference.
How much were the greens changed, if at all, when they came in and refurbished it?
The greens were essentially untouched. We regrassed them, but we didn't change any contours, with the exception of the 15th and 17th greens, the par threes. We had lost over the years some hole locations around the edges that we restored. Those were the only changes. We came back in after the championship and created a new hole location on the front right of the 6th green. So all the par threes were really the only changes we made. And they're so subtle that very few people would even realize that.
What about the turf? When did you go from bent to Bermuda, Bob?
We did that right after the 2014 championship. They were still bent grass for the 14 championship.
And what's the difference when you change from bent to Bermuda?
Well, the ultra dwarf Bermuda, it withstands. We can have championship level playing conditions 12 months a year, 52 weeks of the year. With the bent grass surfaces, they tend, regardless of what kind of management regime you're on, June, July, and August are struggles, especially July and August. They struggle. They struggle in the sense of what we want to provide as a challenge, firm and fast and all that. That they just simply can't hold up to that conditioning. But with the Ultra Dwarfs, we're able to do that every week of the year.
So you worked with Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw. Boy, that must have been an adventure, right? Any fun stories working with these guys? You said they obviously pay a lot of attention to detail and to the history of the golf courses, knowing what used to be, and obviously trying to restore these golf courses into what they were like from the original Donald Ross designs.
I think I would go back again and say the respect that they showed for it. They weren't interested in leaving their footprints on it. They wanted it to be what Ross had. And the amount of respect they had for that impressed me a great deal. But the coolest thing was Bill especially. He likes to just walk. Never would go out in a cart. We would have site visits that would go on all day long, and we would walk and walk and walk. And we did a lot of the project when the course was open. And when Bill and I were out there, a group that usually be three or four of us, Mike Davis on some days, and it was all fine. But when Ben was with us and the course was open, anytime we would stand on the tee and go, and groups would come through and they would recognize him. And then they would be like nervous, right? I mean, they wanted to meet Ben, and of course he loved engaging with them. And we were like, "Come on, Ben, we've got work to do." But he would stand there and talk to them for hours if he had time. But that was one of the things I remember the most. And we would stand and take bets on what golfer may hit the green or not on a par three, and that would amp up the nervousness of the players themselves.
Sounds like a lot of fun. So having been here since 1982, Bob, has your appreciation for what Donald Ross originally created, has it gotten even more so, just having been here for so long and seeing what he originally did here so long ago?
Yeah, an appreciation for it for sure. The more I've learned about it, especially the last 20 years, let's say, the more I appreciate it, and the more basic and fundamental what he did in the Sandhills and how he was able to do it here, it's pretty amazing. Now, to be honest with you, when I came here in 1982, basically right out of college, you know, I had no appreciation for it at all. But it's one of the things, the more you learn about it, the more you appreciate it. Right. And it absolutely goes for course number two.
Right. And your thoughts about the way Pinehurst kind of preserves Donald Ross's legacy and history and keeps the photos out. And really, you walk around the lodge and you walk around the clubhouse and you see so many pictures and tributes to the great Donald Ross.
And I think those are the things. And the more we're able to visit with people and talk with our guests and our members, again, just like me, the more you know about it, the more knowledgeable you are, the more you appreciate it. And I think us being able to share all those photographs and things in the hallways, whether it initiates conversation or not, or people's opinions or interest, but the more they become interested, the more knowledgeable they'll be and appreciate it.
So then Gil Hance comes in and he built the cradle in 2017. And I know you worked closely with Gil Hance. And how would you describe the difference, perhaps, between, say, Gil Hance and Crenshaw and Coeur?
You know, very little difference, to be honest with you. But I would say the similarities are so that they like to be on the ground and doing things. They're not so much about taking out a set of plans and architectural plans and detailed drawings and all that. They really want to be on the ground, in the dirt, if you will. And that's the way they approach it. And it's kind of unnerving at first until you get to understand that, because I'm kind of a numbers guy and like to plan this and have everything in my little box. But not those. You have to learn just to kind of roll with it. And when we were doing the cradle, we had already decided to have Gil do number four golf course that fall. So the cradle really and truly was, we were able to develop a relationship with him, get an understanding of what he, how he worked and what his driven desires were. So we got to know him really well before we even started number four. So that was a blessing for us.
And how about Tom Fazio with number eight? I remember playing number eight with none other than the rock star himself, Robert Dedman. And that was just such a delight. And we're going to play it again this week. But boy, to go to number eight and have a completely different designer and experience. One of my favorite designers, Tom Fazio.
Working with Tom Fazio was wonderful at course number eight. You know, it was a complete virgin site, the old site of the gun club. And one of the things that strikes me really when we were just marking center lines on course number eight, which is where you go down through the woods and cut a swath 6 feet wide, just wide enough to walk the center lines after the engineers put turning points in. They'll put a T-post in and another post at the turning point of the fairway. And I'll never forget walking down the fourth fairway with Tom, and he had the engineer, the surveyors with us. He said, this post is in the wrong spot. And I'm thinking, well, that's really, this guy's engineered it, and you're walking on the ground, you can't see 20 feet on either side, and you're telling him that, or asking him to, you're questioning that. And sure enough, they came back, and it was about 30 feet off of where it should be. And I asked him, I said, that blows my mind. How can you tell that post was off? He's like, well, I'm supposed to be able to stand here. The idea is stand here and see over the third green, or the fourth green, excuse me, the fourth green, you should be able to see the pond down there behind the green, and you can't. But if you get it up here at this elevation, you can. And that's how he designed it, but they laid it out wrong in the field. So when you play over there, on the fourth hole, to keep that in mind when you get up there.
And it's great he remembered that, right? Just by being there. So you had Alice Maple designing number five in the 50s and 60s. Then George Fazio was the original designer of number 6. Then Tom came back in, right, to redesign that. And number 7, Reese Jones. So when you look at this, you know, really the whole body of work at Pinehurst, you have a number of, you know, some of the greatest course designers on the planet.
He has a great heritage in each of them. Actually, Tom worked with his uncle George on number 6 originally. And then he came back in and made some changes for us in the early 2000s. But as far as Reese is concerned, his father, Robert Trent Jones, had redesigned course number 4 in the 70s, 60s and 70s. So when Reese came in 82, that's when I first started to work here. It was closed and Reese was working on it at the time. So he was working on his father's creation then. And then he came back in and did number 7 for us in 84 and 85.
And they all have different personalities, right? But you've worked with all of them, except for maybe the older guys, Donald Ross, Allison, and Robert Trent Jones Sr., maybe. But
yeah, I did meet him with Reese one day on number 7. But they do have their own personalities. But the commonality they have is their love for golf and love to create something that people enjoy. It's a thing of beauty. I mean, it really and truly a golf course is.
How about, I know it's like choosing your favorite child, but which course do you like to play more than any other?
On any given day, it would be different course. But I think if I were going to wake up and play golf 3 or 4 days a week, I would probably choose course number 1. It's an old throwback course. Very little has been done as far as earth moving since Donald Ross, since back in the early 1900s. And it's a very playable, very walkable course. So that would be my choice, I guess.
What's the highlight of being here for so long for you?
That would be too, I couldn't name it. So many of them are built on one, built on the other, but I would have to say working with with Bill and Ben on course number 2. I learned more about that, and I gained that much more appreciation for it. That would have to be one of them. The 99 U.S. Open speaks for itself because that was the first. The back-to-back Opens in 14 were off the chart. I think from an accomplishment perspective, based on what people thought might happen or could happen, all the worst-case scenarios, we read about them and heard them from media for several months, and it couldn't have turned out better. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. We were very fortunate with the weather. It cooperated. It could have been not so good. And we had 2 great champions. And to have Michelle Wee finish with that champion with the Women's Open, that was pretty special.
And now how to prepare for the 2024 U.S. Open and all the other ones that Pinehurst is going to get as they've become – you know, one of these permanent host sites.
Well, the interesting thing for 24 is going to be, as we're looking at it, we know there's 3 or 4 more U.S. Open championships in the future. So as we develop facilities and with the USGA team of building things, that knowing that we're going to be back here in 6 years, what can we do differently? And I think that's going to be a great challenge as well.
Thank you so much, Bob Farron, the Director of Economy here at Pinehurst. Really appreciate your hard work.
Well, thank you so much. It's awesome to talk with you and visit with you. I hope you enjoy your time here.